Welcome to the Social Network Show, the only worldwide show dedicated to social networking, social networkers, the actual voice of social networkers worldwide. Your host, Dr. J, will be with you shortly, and we hope that you join us on Twitter at SocialNetShow and at thesocialnetworkstation.com. And now, here's Dr. J.
You have heard us speak frequently on the Social Network Show about teaching youngsters how to use communication technology safely, including texting and online social networks. I appreciate that you want to hear facts rather than speculation, and that is why we so often bring you researchers who are spending time and effort to learn what the real situation is and how you can best deal with it. Today, you'll be happy to learn that Dr. Elizabeth Englander is back with us. She is a professor at Bridgewater State University of Massachusetts, founder and director of the Massachusetts Aggression Reduction Center, and author of Bullying and Cyberbullying, What Every Educator Should Know. And I always like to add, and what every parent should know as well. She will address the question today, what are the different technical issues or technology issues that parents face at different ages of their child, and how can you respond to them appropriately? Welcome back to the Social Network Show, Dr. Englander.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Well, let's start at the beginning and ask about infants and toddlers. First of all, why is infotech even an issue at this young age?
Well, it's very clear by now that information technology is an issue in parenting infants and toddlers. And I don't mean that, you know, babies are getting smartphones and, you know, going out with their friends and doing things. That's not the issue. It's a different issue with babies and toddlers. We know that babies and toddlers are increasingly being exposed to technology, that they're using different kinds of apps and different kinds of programs and websites. A study that was that is still actually ongoing right now in England, in Canada, has found that most of the children, most of the families who reported having an infant or a toddler, reported a couple of hours a day where children at least had some kind of access to a mobile device, where there might be a tablet in the room that they could tap or hit, or pictures on it that they could respond to, a television on, things like that. So we know that screen time is definitely present for infants and toddlers. But the really interesting thing that we haven't studied so much, but we're just beginning to study now, is the whole impact of parents using technology and how that may be changing parenting.
What do you mean?
One of the things that we've noticed sort of out in our work in the field is that many parents today who have infants and toddlers have their own devices. So they may have a smartphone, and they may be at the park with a baby. And while they're pushing a baby on a swing, which is admittedly sometimes kind of boring, they may be looking at their device and thinking about, you know, checking their email or checking their messages or doing something to sort of entertain themselves. But the real interesting thing is, how does that change the interaction with the infant?
Right. I was wondering what is so different about interacting with a screen versus a live in front of you person. But this is another aspect of it too. If you're with someone, a parent who is otherwise engaged, you might say, are they, can you say that they're truly available?
Right. And one of the ways, I mean, it's not uncommon for some of the things that parents do when they're caring for infants or toddlers to be a little bit sort of habit-driven or mundane. So, for example, you might be walking down the street with an infant or a toddler in a stroller. And what do you do if you don't have a device or if you're not looking at your device? What you're probably going to do is you're probably going to be talking to your baby.
You may be pointing out things that you see or asking them how they are, because, you know, parents tend to do that instinctively because there's really not much else to talk about. You can't discuss politics with your baby. So you say things like, oh, look at the doggy that's walking towards us, or isn't it a beautiful day today, or things like that. And the question is, if you have a device to look at, do you do less of that kind of interacting with your infant? And if you do less, how does that impact things? And we really don't have an answer yet.
Yeah, that's one thing I like about you. You always say, well, tell us what we don't know, rather than just kind of take a guess at it, take a stab at it. If I'm wondering, too, the effect of a parent being engaged with a device, am I correct that it just seems like a normal thing for a child or even a baby to want to know what it is? What's mom got?
Absolutely, absolutely. And
or
anybody,
dad.
particularly a toddler, who children learn very, very young today that there's something very interesting going on screens. And if they see somebody interacting with a screen, they're very, very interested. If you've ever had the experience of being out in public where you were using a screen, particularly something a little bit bigger than a cell phone, say maybe a tablet, and there are infants or toddlers around, you may find, it's not uncommon to find, that they'll toddle right up to you and they'll want to see what's on your screen. That's pretty common and pretty normal. And, of course, it may mean that they get exposed to things their parents wish that they weren't exposed to. But that concerns me a little bit less, because I think that toddlers, you know, there's a great deal of information, particularly complex information, that they're not really going to take in. So I'm not so worried about a toddler seeing a racy photograph or something like that. I'm more interested in thinking about how our interactions with our babies and our toddlers have changed. For example, is their language development going to be affected if their parents don't speak as much to them? Is their emotional development going to be affected if their parents seem absorbed by a screen and fail to sort of notice some of the more subtle emotional changes that they see in their baby or their toddler? So those are the kinds of changes that I'm most interested in. And, you know, people are beginning to think about this, but most of the research on infants and toddlers has really looked at their use of devices, not their parents' or their caregivers' use of devices.
Well, if we go on to a little bit older age, before we do that, I guess I should ask if there's any tentative conclusions that you can come to at this point in terms of what direction that's pointing.
Well, I can look at some of the other research that has been done. And say, what is the purpose? What happens to babies and toddlers when their parents talk to them or interact with them? So, for example, we know that infants and toddlers learn their language development through their interaction with infants and toddlers. So I am going to make an educated guess here and say that if the time we spend talking to our babies is really impacted by the use of devices, then some of their development is probably going to be impacted too. Not necessarily forever, but we know that language development in babies and toddlers affects their brains and their brain development. So, you know, even if we say, well, maybe they'll develop language a little bit later in life, say 6 months later, that might have an impact in the long term on their brain development.
I wonder if that's part of the reason the American Pediatric Association has recommended devices be delayed, at least for children playing with them, until after the age of 4, I believe they stated.
Yeah, they talked about limits on screen time for toddlers to 2 hours. And it's challenging, but I do think that young parents today have to be conscious. They have to actually think to themselves, what's going on, you know, what am I doing, and is this an opportunity for me to to talk or to interact with my baby. And even if it's, you know, even if my cell phone is sort of, you know, luring me, if it is an opportunity, then I should take it. And I should take that opportunity to talk and interact with them. And so looking at the consciousness would probably take us a long way on this.
Right. And looking at the positive point of view, what should be going on rather than what shouldn't be going on. And I think it's interesting that you included TV on that, because that, after all, was the original screen and is still is, along with whether you're watching TV per se, broadcast, or DVDs or games or whatever. Well, what about getting a little older, fours and fives, preschool, and so on? What are the big questions parents need to think through on that age group?
Well, I think that the big story around children who are beginning to be school-aged and going up through elementary school years, maybe begin, you know, at the end of early education, like kindergarten and older, I think the big story there is that although in the past we've seen digital issues as being only for teenagers, that really isn't the case anymore. One of the things that that we do is we have a very large study that has about 50,000 children in it, and we begin following them in elementary school. And this is a group of kids that are drawn from about 15 different states around the country. And what we found is that between 2010 and 2014, the percentage of elementary age kids that told us that they had problems went up pretty dramatically. In 2010, 16% of those of the young kids told us that somebody had been really cruel to them online. But by 2014, that percentage was up to 25%. So, you know, I think the story for elementary school is that you can't sort of sit on your laurels and wait for them to be teenagers. This is a situation where it's going to happen now, and it's a situation that parents have to be aware of right away in elementary school.
Okay. And just to realize that it's beginning, permeating the society at a younger and younger age. Well, that is fascinating, and we're going to talk about a little older age group in the second half of the show. Dr. Englander will share more helpful suggestions for parenting in the digital age. This is Dr. J, and you're listening to the Social Network Show.
Questions? Comments? Email us at questions@thesocialnetworkshow.com. We'll be right back.
In times like these, violence in our schools is a reality. So it's important to know how to prevent such tragedies from happening. Talk to your kids. Explain to them the dangers of weapons at school. And tell them that if they see a student with a weapon or even hear someone talking about having one, they need to report it immediately. Tell them if something doesn't look right or seem right to you, speak up. Get to know who your child is spending time with and where they are at all times. If you notice that your child has sudden mood or behavior changes, or seems to always be angry or sad, talk to a teacher, administrator, or medical professional. Be a role model for them and settle your own conflicts without resorting to violence. School should be a safe place for our children. We all need to work together to keep it that way. Let's put an end to these tragedies. Ask your school to adopt an anti-violence program. Visit ncpc.org to learn more on how to keep our children safe. That's ncpc.org.
A message from the U.S. Department of Justice, National Crime Prevention Council, and the Ad Council.
Now, back to the Social Network Show.
Welcome back to the Social Network Show, where you are hearing from Dr. Elizabeth Englander of the Massachusetts Aggression Reduction Center, as she explains how the challenges of information technology change as your child gets older. So, Dr. Englander, now we talked about the very young and preschool and so forth. What about when the time comes to get the first cell phone? When about is that, do you think, as far as what it's happening and what you would recommend?
Well, you know, I get that question all the time. I'll often give a talk or something like that, and people will raise their hand and say, we noticed that you didn't say at what age a child should get their first cell phone. So The reason I don't generally recommend a particular age is that there are a lot of different factors that come into this. Everybody has different circumstances. You know, their kids mm-hmm. making different things and doing different kinds of activities, traveling in different ways. Everybody has different children. Some children mm-hmm. are very, very sensible at a very young age and really, you know, really ready to take this on. Others are, you know, have kids who they really don't feel so confident about their judgment. And mm-hmm. it's really challenging to come up with a one-size-fits-all kind of circumstance.
Sure.
So, you know, my feeling is that today, for the most part, you're going to almost certainly have to get them a smartphone. And so the best thing to do is to think about what are the advantages and what are the risks of smartphones. And then knowing that, think about your situation and what your child is like. Have a talk with them about the possibility of getting them a phone. And then make a decision based on how they respond and how seriously they seem to take your concerns.
So in terms of having a discussion with the child, is mm-hmm. that what you mean?
Yeah. So, for example, let's say that you say, okay, I would like to talk about getting you a smartphone to use. And what I want to do is tell you what the rules would be, and I'd like to hear, your response to this. So you might say, for example, the person who pays for the device is the person who owns it. So if I get you a device, it's really mine. I'm letting you use it, but it's really mine. And you have to be comfortable with the idea that what you're using is the device that I own. And if your child says, no way, and screams and runs away and slams the door, then they're probably not ready for a device. But if they say, I'm not happy about that, but I can deal.
That ownership issue is really, in a way, obvious, but I think it's underappreciated, not only by kids, but by parents as well.
I agree with you, and it's really a little startling to me because these devices are very expensive, and generally speaking, we pay a lot of money to use them. Mm-hmm. It's not as though they're free and came with your phone system. So it is a little surprising, but I think that more and more parents really are beginning to recognize the ownership issue. I mean, I increasingly run into parents who tell me that they have already told their children that.
Mm-hmm. Well, it is a good explanation of why you're going to have control over the use of it and setting the rules and so forth. And that works for the use of the internet when they're at home as well. What about as kids get older and into adolescence? Is it possible or is it even desirable to know everything they do, everywhere they go online?
Well, I personally think that it's no longer possible for the most part. And the reason that I think it's not possible is that once you give a teenager a mobile device that accesses the internet, that they carry around in their pocket with them everywhere they go, and they go to multiple places that have wireless access. So they go to friends' houses and coffee shops and bookstores and, you know, lots of places. I don't see from a practical point of view how any parent could know every single thing that their adolescent does. I think the idea of controlling what a teenager does is an idea that, online that is an idea that really predates mobile devices.
Mm-hmm.
I think once mobile devices came on the scene, that became pretty much impossible. And really what we have left is we need to talk to kids. That's a tool we've always had, and it's really the best one. It was always the best one, and I think it's one that we need to be sure to use more and more today.
So it may be a blessing in disguise, really, to indicate that the real quality conversation, and we had, last time you were with us on the show, you discussed when can you actually find that time to talk with your kids. I think one of your useful suggestions was that when you're driving them here or there, to sit in the front seat means no device.
That's right.
In action.
And that is a great opportunity. Right. That's a great opportunity to have those kinds of conversations. And you don't have to beat them over the head with it. This isn't something you have to, you know, visit every single day. But when you have an opening, if there's a case of something that occurred that you read about in the news or something like that, then, you know, be sure to take advantage of that and say to your kids, well, you know, I read in the news that, you know, so-and-so was tweeting her friends and, you know, tweeted out a secret she wasn't supposed to know, and it all became a problem. And has anything like that ever happened to you? Or do you know anybody it's ever happened to? And what do you think about that? And how would you handle it? And if that happened, how could I help you? Those kinds of questions.
Oh,
just use what's going on around you.
I like that last one. If that happened, how could I help you? And just the emphasis on questions rather than, you know, the usual sermon that kids hate to hear. They hate to hear anyway.
You know what? One of the things that we find when we talk to teenagers is that if you say to them, if this happened, how could I help you? Particularly around technology, they'll often say, oh, there's nothing you could do. You know, there's nothing you could do. But then if you say to them, well, you know, sometimes, practically speaking, there isn't much that people can do, but talking about it sometimes is really helpful. Sometimes it's a situation where just talking about it can make people feel better or can make them cope better, or sometimes it'll give you an idea that you might, that, you know, you just didn't have before. And so, you know, I always say to the kids that we work with, you know, it's okay to, you don't have to have an agenda. You don't have to know how somebody's going to help you out. Sometimes it works just to talk about something, and it might just make you feel better able to cope with it.
Right. The process is helpful. Well, what about sending revealing photos by text, known as sexting? That seems like very risky behavior. Is there any way to prevent your kids from sexting?
Well, practically speaking, probably the answer to that is no. But there's no absolute way to prevent it. But the best way to try to prevent it or to work on it is really to just talk to them about it. And talk to them about it, ask them what they've seen, what they've heard, tell them what you think is right or wrong and why you think it's not a good idea. I'm assuming here that most parents listening to this probably don't think it's a good idea. So, you know, tell them what you think, because even if they don't say, oh, gee, Mom, you're totally right, I'll never do that now, which is not what you can expect to hear, right? Not going to happen. But, you know, every single thing we know about the interaction of teenagers and their parents suggests that those kinds of conversations have an impact. Even if it's not an obvious impact, even if they don't say, oh, you're totally right, it still has an impact on how they choose to behave. Mm-hmm. At the very least, if you talk about it, your kids will know that you're aware of the issue and they can come to you if they need help. If you never bring it up, then you're not going to be seen as a source of helpfulness if they ever should have a problem.
And you've also pointed out the need to not catastrophize, you know, to suggest that if you send one compromising text, that the world's going to fall in on you. But rather that there's a lot of cases where there aren't any bad results of risky behavior. And to recognize that is helpful, too, because it maintains your credibility.
I'm not sure that it's a great idea to point out to kids that it's probably not
going to result in anything terrible. It's more that that's something parents need to be aware of, that they don't want to catastrophize to themselves. I don't think that they should say to their kids, you know, go ahead and send a sex. Nothing's going to happen. It's no big deal. Because the truth is, the only things we've measured in research are the short-term outcomes. We've never measured the long-term outcomes. We really don't know what could happen over the long term to kids who do this. So it's not a good idea to reassure kids that it's no big deal, but I do think that parents themselves should understand in their heads that it's not. This is not inevitably a catastrophe. It really isn't, and they shouldn't, you know, sell the farm and give up all hope of a normal life because their kid comes to them and says, oh, I sent this photo. The odds are, it appears, the odds are that, nothing catastrophic is going to happen.
Well, as usual, I still have lots of questions I'd like to ask you, but we're running out of time for today. So thank you so much for taking time to join us again, Dr. Englander. You're awesome as usual.
Oh, thanks so much for having me on.
And thank you, our listeners. We hope you subscribe to the Social Network Show podcast on iTunes, Stitcher.com, or on the website, and we'll automatically receive each show with our wonderful guests and vital topics. So if there's something more you'd like to hear about from Dr. Englander, by all means, search for that on our website. You will see a collection of her podcasts, her interviews, and lots of excellent information there. So until I meet you here again, please have fun and be safe online and off.
You've been listening to The Social Network Show, the only worldwide show dedicated to social networking and social media. Listen to archived shows and follow us on Twitter. The views expressed on The Social Network Show are those of the hosts and guests and may not be the views of Social Network Intermedia. The Social Network Show is produced by Social Network Intermedia, copyright 2012.